That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Nabil Khatib would likely have me running in the opposite direction if we encountered each other on a dark path. He's the exact lookalike of every villain played in every movie ever written. However, since I know better, I'd be clinging to his arm, knowing he'd likely be the best to defend against any danger, a teddy bear wrapped in an MMA fighter. While he can play the tough guy on film, stunt double some fight scenes, and ride off like the Fast and the Furious, this former professional MMA fighter and fourth-degree black belt is a softie to boot. Just give him a knife, and this chef would rather chop up a meal than use it as a weapon. Over the course of Nabil's professional fighting career, where his nickname was Nabil the Thrill, he also witnessed the influx of people, men, women, and children alike, turning to the martial arts for its discipline, as well as the physical and emotional release. A way to combat stress and anxiety, and a tool used to help and hear the most silent of voices. As head coach of Team Bushido Fitness Center, their approach is confidence, balance, self-protection, approaching the world with clarity, self-confidence, and control over your body. So we're going to see where this podcast goes. Welcome to Living Your Life with Leanne Lang, the podcast brought to you by Extension Marketing. And for more information, you can head to extensionmarketing.com. Nabil, do you think, did I cover enough of it there? Did I get it?
You covered quite a bit. That was quite an intro, I can tell you that. Wow.
Yeah. But okay, so, and it was funny because right off the top, I'm like, okay, am I saying your name right? Do I have it right? And but there's a story there.
The name, that, I mean, the name, my name is Nabil. You know, people called me that most of my life. And of course, with my career, Nabil the Thrill was a nickname that a friend of mine, Glenn Smurl, gave me. Hey, Glenn. It was a lot of fun, you know, but... You know, I had a sister. Isis' sister passed away last 6 months, 8 months ago, and she actually is the one who named me. You know, she named me when I was born. She was 8 years older than me or so. So she told my parents that she wanted to name me Nabil. And you know, since my career ended, I'm retired and stuff, I wanted to change my name, not necessarily change my name, but pronounce it properly, right? And it's actually pronounced Nabil. So Nabil the Thrill doesn't really go well. But you know what? I'm in a different part of my life. I'm in a different, a part of my life right now. And I think that I actually put out on social media, you know, I appreciate the Nabil the Thrill my whole career. But
the pronunciation, to go back to the way she meant for it to
really,
be.
It really hits me deep when I think about it. So my sister...
Did I say that he was a softie? Honestly, you got this fierce-looking man, you know. And to think, your sister must have meant a good sister.
Yeah, she was a great sister. Yeah, my whole family's fantastic. So I wanted to change it, and I put it out on social media. You know, thank you for calling me Nabil the Thrill and so on. But if you can pronounce my name Nabil, that'd be great. And I even spell it now sometimes Nabeel. To make people understand
that. To make people understand that, because it is spelled IL.
Yeah, it is. Nabil, it makes sense, right? So.
You know what? It's funny that the responsibility, you know, even as an 8-year-old to have, you know, you're old enough. A lot of times you're like 2, 3, right? When the sibling comes around. But when you've got an 8-year-old kind of going, okay, there's a new brother coming in.
Yeah.
That she was able to do that.
Yeah. We're 6 kids, and I was the youngest. And just a typical close Lebanese family where, you know, always fooling around and having a good time, and we took care of each other growing up, and it was a lot of fun.
You're from the city. You're from Ottawa.
Yeah, born and raised. Yeah.
Okay, so born and raised, 6 kids in the family.
Yeah.
Parents doing what to help keep 6 kids entertained?
Oh my God, I don't even know what they did. I think we entertained ourselves for the most part, because they're always busy at the restaurant. We had a restaurant growing up. We were on Wilbroad Street, right in Sandy Hill, and We had a little apartment upstairs, and I believe my dad had the building. And then he moved to King Edward and St. Patrick. There was a restaurant, 2 little corner stores, and 5 apartments. So we lived upstairs in the apartment, and it was a 3-bedroom apartment with 6 kids.
and so here's the start of the martial arts, jumping from bed to bed and fighting off siblings for, you know, was that, I don't know, the youngest of six kids in a very small environment, you had to be feisty. You had to, did everyone have to just fight for what they needed?
Man, I can, you know, I can tell you stories. It's crazy. And with me, I was too young. I'm just sitting back and watching. Seeing my brother and my sister, you know, fighting it out, duking it out with for whatever reason. You know, I remember a story where I'm not sure if it was my sister. I think she threw a dustpan on my brother maybe and cut his lip open. He still has a scar on his lip. And we used to fight all the time. But I mean, it was a family fight. It was a love fight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was trying to let each other know how we felt about something in a way that we were never taught, right? So we didn't know how to express ourselves. So we just fight or whatever. We'd yell or we'd, you know, we'd grow up in a small apartment and run out of room. And, you know, we'd run out of room in here as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like the cage that I think you spent so many years in. Yeah. Take that apartment, put yourself in a cage, and MMA fighting was like, hey, I'm home with my siblings at this point.
It's very, very interesting.
When did you start to get involved in martial arts? I mean, and even back then, mixed martial arts, MMA really wasn't something that people were participating in back in those days.
It was late. I was 25 or 26, I believe.
So this wasn't something you were doing as a child. What kept you busy then as a child?
As a child, what kept me busy was running around the streets and being a moron, like a lot of us were at this age, at that age. I was a bit rebellious. My parents, you know, tried to raise us as Canadians or raise us as Lebanese people living in Lebanon. Here in Canada, it doesn't really work that way. Do you know what I mean? So they tried to raise us with the same strict values and the same strict ideas in Lebanon, but they didn't adapt.
No,
I believe they tried. I don't think they realized what an impact it was. You know, them trying to implement, you know, push their values and push their rules and push their ideas on us kids. In this environment, it's very difficult. So I rebelled quite a bit. You know, I think half my siblings did. I know half my siblings did. You know, and I ran the streets as a kid, and you know, got into trouble quite a bit. And I quit high school a couple of times, and went back and quit. I never finished high school. But you know, I started to change a little bit. I realized that I gotta straighten up a little bit, and then I actually got a job as a manager at a gas station. I was pretty proud of myself, you know, had my own apartment and stuff. But later on in life, things got really difficult. Got into some trouble.
I'm sorry, you're saying later in life things got difficult? Like, here I am arguing. I've dropped out of school.
Yeah, but I just said.
I know, but for most people, they would think, okay, that already is.
Oh, that's nothing. I've got a lot more stories to tell you.
Okay.
By the time I was 18 years old, I was doing pretty good. But then I ran into trouble with some friends. I was never really addicted to any kind of drugs in high school. I smoked weed and that type of thing and drank and all kinds of things. But then later on in life, I sort of stopped all that stuff. I started working, trying to be an adult at 18 years old. Then I got caught into doing some drugs, which wasn't really something I was into, but it was like, I was out one night with some friends and tried it out. It was a different drug I never tried before. And that was a very difficult time for me. So.
Was it a very quick addicted?
Very quick. The first, it was cocaine. It was the first time I ever tried it. First time. And it was the most incredible feeling I've ever had in my life, right? So going from a difficult childhood and going from, you know, lack of confidence and all these difficult times I had, I did this drug and it turned me into a superstar. It was incredible. And of course it went all downhill from there. So
Can you stop for a second?
Yeah.
Because right now we're hearing in the headlines, right? You've got these good kids going to a party.
Yeah.
They take this one and their entire life in a split second
is over.
Yeah. or the life that they knew until they hopefully are able to fight back and to move forward. But when you read the headlines, when you see the stories that are going on, when you see the fentanyl issues, like, do you have any connection to these stories?
I do. The only issue that I have with it is that I don't, well, the only issue, the problem that I have is that I don't really understand, right? Because I don't know what fentanyl does. I don't know what this does. I don't know what these things do. I know that they change your, to change you, how you feel and how you're acting. It makes you high and whatever, but I don't know what the feeling is, but I know what cocaine did to me. Whether it's cocaine or fentanyl or acid or whatever the drugs that they're using, it's always something that they use to hide or get away from whatever's happening in their life. I get that. So for me to understand it is very difficult. But for me to know that it is a difficult thing to get away from, I know that 1,000%. Whatever the drug is and however it makes them feel.
When you do it this one time out with friends, what happens when you wake up the next day? Like, what was?
Oh, first thing I thought was, wow, that made me feel pretty incredible. I was playing pool like a superstar. I was talking to people like I was a champ of anything I ever wanted to be. And then I started saying to myself, wow, this stuff must make a lot of money. So what do? I start selling it. And then, my attitude, I turned into a real moron, yeah, to put it lightly.
What was family reaction or your siblings' reaction to knowing what you were doing?
They didn't know. I don't think they knew. They didn't know for a while until they, I think they started realizing there was problems when I was missing in action, when I wasn't showing up to events. Then I think they started realizing that there was an issue, because I never really talked to them about it. I just, did what I did.
How long were you able to maintain this lifestyle?
You call it maintain? If you want to call it maintain.
Well, you maintain, you were functioning.
Yeah,
you were functioning-ish. Criminal. Like, I I did not add criminal to the intro.
I didn't want you to add the criminal part until I tell you now. It's the first time you hear this. You don't know this about me. Not many people know about this because I don't really, it's not that I don't want people to know about it, but you mean, hey, so how you doing? So yeah, I was a crackhead when I was 18. It's not really a conversation piece, right? So, but if you want to talk about...
Especially with the work that you're doing with so many people, right? Yeah. So how long did this stage, I'll say
It was about 5 years.
Wow.
5 years, yeah, 5 years. And then I ended up on the street for a bit, and that was difficult. But you know what? When they say, they talk about, drug addicted people, they say that no one can help them until they hit rock bottom, then it's up to them to change. It's 1,000% true with me. I went to rehab. They kicked me out. Why? I don't know. They didn't think I was doing the job. I wasn't doing drugs or anything. They just didn't think I was following their process. And not everything works for everyone. For me, I just had to hit literally rock bottom. And after I quit, I was married within a year. Imagine.
Oh, what was rock bottom?
I was on the street. I lived on the street. I had no place to go, and I had no money. And I moved into the Salvation Army. Yeah. There you go.
I think it's amazing when people's lives. You see people. I mean, I've seen you over the years. I've interviewed you. I don't know how many times on the show. To know the history or what people have had to battle to get where they are, or that you can see someone who's light and happy and successful and not realize the road that they've had to travel to get to that point.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And that's what I find interesting about people in general. Whenever I'm having conversations with people, I love to hear their story, because sometimes I can relate, sometimes I can't. But maybe the story has nothing to do with me or anything else, but every story is very interesting. Because environment has a lot of impact on people's lives. My environment had a big impact on me. So I just find that part of life very interesting. And And for me to be able to pass on my knowledge and pass on my experience, it makes me feel good to help, to be able to help other people. And you know what, like I said, when someone's addicted to drugs, you can't stop them. You can only give them advice. That's it. You can't tell them, hey, you're going to go to rehab, or you have to do this. You have, as soon as somebody tells me I have to do something, guess what I'm going to do? Complete opposite. It's normal.
When did you start to realize that you were coming out of this? That there was a light at the end of the tunnel, that you were doing the right...
No clue.
Okay.
No clue. I went into the Salvation Army. I've told this story to a couple of people. I woke up 24 hours later because I hadn't slept for 7 days. And had some food, went back to sleep, slept a few hours, woke up, walked down the street, George Street, got a job somehow. I don't know how. I applied at this job called the Peel Pub. Three brothers owned it. All happened to be addicted to cocaine, apparently, from what I know, what I'm told. But I got the job. I worked there, and I haven't stopped working ever since. And I had no desire to go back to it.
You kept busy.
Yep.
Then you mentioned too that you got married. Got married. Because I asked you as we were sitting down, you know, how old the kids were, and they're like, oh, they're not so much kids.
Yeah, yeah, 23, 25, and 28. Yeah, this month.
Do they know your story?
100%. Yeah, told them when they were younger.
When they were young.
Yeah. You know, if you don't come out and tell stories like this, you know, people talk about, you know, not letting your kids learn out on the street. I truly believe that 100%, because the thing is that they learn things on the street, sure, but they're not going to learn it properly, or they're going to learn that it's it's really cool to be like this, or it's really fun to do this and it's fun to do that, but they don't really know what the consequences can be, you know, no matter what it is, whether it's, you know, smoking weed or doing cocaine or drinking too much or whatever the case, or watching porn or anything like that, right?
By the time you're having these conversations, though, they're seeing you and you're living a very different life. By the time you're able to have these conversations where they're understanding this. So you're married young, mm-hmm. but you have three wonderful children. Yeah. When did you, because then I think right around the time when you started to look into martial arts or to get involved in this.
It's kind of funny.
Is it because you're bouncing at the Peel Pub? And
I was a cook. No, I was a cook at the Peel Pub. I got a job as a cook, not a bouncer at all. You know, it's funny that part of that story, while I was there working as a cook, I actually had someone come to see me that I owed money from my drug days. And, you know, you try not to go back and talk about what happened in your life when, you know, because I was trying to move forward. And for some reason, I had no desire to continue using drugs for whatever reason. Like I said, rock bottom. But this guy shows up. He says, I owed him money. I said, I don't have it. And we're in the basement of the Peel Pub. He wanted to chat with me. Okay.
This fine. Is like right out of a movie.
Yeah.
Like dark alley. So, like, so where's my money?
I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm a scared, you know, 20 year old. I don't know. I don't know how to fight. I never fought in my life, really. And so the guy, you know, tells me, he says, you owe me money. I said, you got to pay me. He said, well, I don't have it. What are you going to pay me? I said, I don't have it. He wound up and he smacked me across the face and he hit me super hard. And I just stopped. And I was stunned. I was like, can I swear? Am I allowed to swear?
This is the way.
Yeah. I was shitting my pants pretty much. And I didn't know what to do. So I looked at him. And I just went, hit me again if you want. But I still don't have the money. And he just got all frustrated. He got like that. He left. I never saw him again.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I was terrified. Terrified. But I mean, what am I supposed to do? You know, am I going to run? No. Okay, so I owe you money. Beat me up, get it over with, and leave. I mean, I got to work.
What am I supposed to do? I got to go chop some food.
Yeah,
up in the
exactly. Yeah.
Do you want to come? I'll have a knife in my hand.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so I didn't know what to do. I really had no clue. And then so he left, and I continued working. He never came back. And I actually, you know, to be honest with you, I thought about that day, and I said, I better go do something about any money that I owe. So I went to the people that I owed money to. I said, I'm not going back in that life. So I'm not paying you back. And I'm going to stay away. I'm just staying out of it, you know?
You were able to walk up to people who you owed money to.
Yeah, not that much money, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But I said, I'm not going back
To that life.
To that life. So I'm not going to be paying you. So you have to take it as a loss. And if you have to do something about it, then do something about it. But I won't. And
is that liberating?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Well, and you're not always looking over. Were you scared that you were always going to be looking over your shoulder?
No, not really. Maybe it's sometimes, but not on a regular basis. It wasn't that big of a deal to me, to be honest with you. But you know, I tried to look forward, look ahead more than looking backwards. So that's what I was doing. I was really enjoying working at the Peel Pub. It was fun. You know, I missed the kitchen, you know, and even though the owners were a disaster and they're always missing, you know, missing food and missing this and not having enough food to serve the customers, it was still fun. And I was running around and I'm like, I'm really taking control. I'm just a cook. I wasn't even a head chef. The head chef was a moron. He was terrible. And so I'm running around, you know, trying to make sure the customers are getting their food properly. So it's a service thing. I loved to serve people. I loved it. So anyway, so I got married and then started moving on to different restaurants. And I just sort of built my way up. And I worked at a few different places. Even though I was a cook, I still was a cook, but I really wasn't a chef, right? So every time I would move to a different restaurant, I would move up a level, right? Move up a level, just like in anything in life, right? You move up a level. There's one place I wanted to work so badly, the Chateau Laurier. I said, I got to get in this place. I got to get in there. I love this place. I think it's fantastic. I've handed resumes over and over and over. Nothing, no phone calls.
It's a really cool kitchen.
Yeah. So I finally, I finally bullshit my way in there. So
who's the who's the head chef at this point?
At this point, it was It was Keith Jones, okay. British dude named Keith Jones. Probably 6'3", 6'4". He had the big chef hat and he wore clogs. And, like he ends up being 12 feet tall, but So I walked in one day. I have this photo album of my pictures of food. You know, it's like a catalog of my work. I walked in one day in the office and I said, I have an interview with the chef, and they said, Chef Nelson. Yes, I have no clue. I don't know what the guy's name is. I have no idea. They said what time? I said 11:00. They sort of looked at me confused. They called the chef and, you know, they're on the phone back and forth. And they said, okay, the chef will see you. So I go in the office and I walk into this huge kitchen in the banquet hall where they get the banquet food ready. And I'm like, I am out of my element. But you know what? I'm going to get this. So I went and I had a meeting with the chef. And the chef was like, he introduces himself. My name is so-and-so. I said, I'm Nabil. We had an interview at 11. Yes. Yes.
You totally made this up.
Yeah. I said, you called me last week. You said, come. Well, that's strange because normally we have our services at 11:30 and it's very busy. So, okay. No problem. So we sat down and went through my stuff and went through my pictures and went through my resume and started the next day. So. Sometimes, and I told him that.
Yeah. Did you end up telling him?
I ended up telling him about 6 months ago.
We had no appointment. I walked in and zero. Just.
100%.
I give full credit. And would this be advice that you would honestly say to
100%. People? If you can't listen. You, you know what? You try the proper way.
Yes.
You try it the right way. And then if it doesn't work, then find your way in there. But you know what? It's a matter of proving. You got to prove yourself. That's all it is. And I did. I proved myself. So I tell anyone that. If you know. Fight your way through without lying to the point that you're not actually who you are, right? So, I did lie, but
you proved it.
I proved it. I wasn't something I'm not, right? And I worked there for a little while. It was fun. It was fun until I got escorted out of there.
Oh my God. What have I done? My listeners are going, who and what are we going to be talking about next?
Listen. You know what? I'm a man with integrity and pride, and I'm also a protector of the people, apparently.
This podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing. They are a new breed of marketing agency that acts as your virtual marketing department, designing and implementing cost-effective marketing strategies that will grow your business. I can speak to this personally, as I've been using the Extension Marketing team to help me launch and grow my business. Founder Pat Whalen has been a lifesaver for me, a genuine coach guiding me along the way into uncharted territory. Tell them you're a friend of the show and receive a free one-hour consultation. Check them out at extensionmarketing.com.
So it was a situation where, it was one time where the head chef was yelling at a server, and he made her cry. And I was.
Have you seen any of the chef shows on television?
Of course, but it doesn't make it right.
I mean, is this like a Gordon Ramsay moment?
Yeah, they weren't on TV. This is all for TV. You know, that's what they do for TV. You know, and I got upset over that, and then the chef was complaining that I wasn't wearing an apron. And I have like an allergy to metal, like a cheap metal, and the chef pants they give you, they have these little buckles, like metal, they turn to rust. Anyway, so I get these rashes on my stomach, and wearing an apron just makes it worse. So I tell him I can't wear an apron, you know. Anyway, so he would give me a hard time all the time, and then he'd give me shit over this, give me shit over that, and then he made a waitress cry, and I just said, you know, I basically told him to go F himself, really. And then he had a meeting with me in the office. He said, we have to have a talk. So I'm going out of the office. And then he started threatening my job. And then I basically told him to go fuck himself. And I said, I don't really give a shit who you are, what you can do.
We went from no swear words to like 50.
Too many? Was
like,
it too many?
In like 30 seconds.
Sorry. This is me. Hi. But anyway, so I'll tone it down a little bit, all right? I told him to go frig himself, because he's such a friggin' big jerky jerk. So there. So he was a big jerk. He really was. And anyway, so I said, you know what? I'm going back to work. I went back to work. He had security come up and escort me out of the building. He told him that I threatened him. I guess maybe he took it that way, but whatever. So they escorted me out of the building, and then we had a meeting with the union reps, which didn't do anything. They didn't help. So it you know,
but
it was fun.
Still go by the Chateau Laurier and appreciate the beauty of the building.
Of course, yeah, of course.
Really,
I just
cool
didn't
kitchen.
Appreciate the person that worked there. You
There's
want to know
great chefs that have been through there.
They have. They
like
have.
I know. You know, I've done so many events there, and I know the chefs well. Like,
yeah, I worked with a man named Kenton. Kenton was really, you know,
yes,
Kenton.
Yes,
he was such a sweetheart, and he was really fun to work with. I still talk to him today once in a while.
Yeah, there's like a fraternity of really interesting chefs I find here.
Yeah.
You know, and between all of the major hotels and the banquet halls, you know, there's something to it. You know, when you're at the top of the game, it's really quite interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. But the business is so. It's so difficult. I mean, you know, you're talking about Gordon Ramsay and how he screams and whatever. It's such a stressful job. I get it. Like, I understand it. Totally understand it. It doesn't make it okay for people to be screaming and whatever. You know, I worked in a restaurant in the hotel. Sorry, at the racetrack in Montreal, a place called Hippodrome, and the chef there was probably 5'5", and German, and spoke with a heavy German accent, and he used to curse all the time. Whenever you get mad, you throw frying pans across the room, you know. It's a stressful job, and I get that, but it doesn't make it okay for them to be, you know, yelling at us and that type of thing.
When you go into a restaurant, what do you order?
Me?
Yeah, like, what kind of food do you appreciate?
Everything. Yeah, but I'm a steak guy.
See, a great, yeah. A good
good steak,
steak.
Medium rare.
Medium rare? Do you appreciate
medium rare?
That's the only way you can have a steak is medium rare.
That's
we have people when people come over for dinner and anyone says like well done, it's just like
yeah, what are you doing?
We can't serve
what,
you.
What's your husband like?
Oh, it's medium rare. Yeah, no, but it's and he does the barbecue and it's don't even bother. Like, we can't serve you. We can't serve you well.
Oh, I'm sorry, you want it well done.
We can't
the
be
doors,
friends.
The doors there.
We
the
can't
doors
be friends in there. Okay, so. We got chefs, we got everything I want to get into. When is the first time that you walk into a martial arts studio and why?
Oh, so oh, okay. I was at the Chateau Laurier.
Yeah.
So one day I was working and a gentleman came up to me, one of the guys I worked with. I can't remember his name. He's always learning. He's learning some jiu-jitsu moves. And he goes, oh, it's really cool. I said, jiu-jitsu, what's that? He tells me, oh, it's a place I'm training at, so-and-so. He says, grab me by the back. All right, there's a bit of a lull in the kitchen right at that point. So he goes back by the back, and he drops, and he, I don't know, does some sort of a kick and weird escape, and It was kind of weird, but it was interesting. Where'd you learn that from? He tells me a place called Terran Jiu-Jitsu, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, the first time we met.
Probably.
Right? Yeah. The first time we met at Terran Jiu-Jitsu back in 1904, I believe. 1904? 05? 06? 1906.
You mean?
1912? It was a while ago. So, anyway. So yeah, I asked about the place. And I went and signed up. And I paid a year up front. And I've been in love with martial arts ever since. I the reason why I decided to go at that point in my life is because things were settled. I was married, had my first child, I believe. Layla was born. That my second child, John was from a previous relationship. So Layla was born, and I had time to start training. Since I was a kid, though, I've always loved Bruce Lee. It's the old story, right? Bruce Lee, of course. But he did, Wing Chun, Kung Fu, and that type of thing. But this stuff was jiu-jitsu, the Japanese style of martial art. But it was martial arts, no matter what it was. But I believe that I was destined to start that style of martial arts because it led me to the career that I had. It was the right way. It was the right way to get to where I wanted to go.
Was it the physical? What did you enjoy about stepping in to the room? Or when is the process for you that you're about to go participate? You know, if it was for a workout or for a fight, is it the moment you start to put on, I shouldn't remember the name of what they're called.
Put on what? Kimono?
Yeah, like when you put on the gi, that's it.
Yeah, gi is actually a term of respect. So that's why they use the word gi.
Okay.
But the actual clothing itself is called a kimono.
Okay.
Right? It's like a robe.
Right.
How much time we have?
Well, I've used like my first half hour with you on crazy stories I had no idea about. So, okay. So let's get
welcome
into
to my world. It's my world. Get into what? Oh, yeah. So.
Yes.
When I walked in, I noticed it was all respect. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sensei and this and respect and da-da-da. And always people were very kind and that type of thing. And I'm like, wow, this is a real different world than what I'm used to, right? Mm-hmm. You know? Effing this and effing that and selling drugs and whatever. And even though I'm out of that world, it's just, it's very different.
It's
very foreign to me, but it's something I thrived towards. I'm like, wow, I really love this. I love this respect in people and love and blah, blah, blah. And so I started training and I was like, I sucked it right up. I sucked it up so much.
So you didn't fight it. You didn't fight the discipline of
I know fell right into it. I loved it so much.
Because was it maybe it was something so you had been lacking?
100%. Been lacking a lot. I was a brat. I was a brat. And hence why I went through those problems I had. I was a brat and a half. Did my parents spoil me? I'm not sure if they did, but I didn't. Maybe I spoiled myself, right? Maybe that's what happened. I spoiled myself and I turned into a bit of an idiot. I was pretty cocky too when I was a kid. But this martial arts thing was very... Brian Aylward. Love you, Brian. Hits me hard. Brian and I are very good friends today. He started me in the martial arts journey. He was my first instructor. He gave me my yellow belt. I love him. I love him for that. It was very different. Like, bowing, yes, sensei, and osu sensei. Osu just means yes, with respect, that type of thing. Help cleaning the gym and help be part of the team. And we all do group events together. And I started bringing that home. And that's like, things with my kids and then I started bringing my kids to the gym and then noticed that they started, doing all the same things. It was just an amazing, amazing transformation, honestly. But at the same time, it's an addiction that you have to realize, okay, well, is this a good addiction or is this a bad addiction? Right? Everybody has addictions.
Right? I almost feel like it's like a split experience. While one side of your brain is being calmed and following order and discipline and like respecting the nature of what it is that you're doing. And then the other side is like not violent, but it's almost like a choreographed attack or outlet or physical. It's like two things battling each other at the same time.
Right. So here's the interesting part about the martial arts. So the martial arts part. So when I talk about martial arts, there's martial arts and there's fighting. I consider them two different things.
Okay.
When you watch a martial artist doing a technique or a move or whatever they're doing, maybe it's on stage or maybe they're demonstrating, you have to look at it as an art of the body, right? It's an art of the body, how the body moves, how the body reacts, and how some things will react differently and some things will move a certain way, that type of thing. But fighting is different. Fighting is totally different.
Okay, what about a martial arts at the Olympics? So let's say a karate judo or a jiu-jitsu.
So
what are we seeing there?
So here's the thing, right? So when I talk about martial arts, it's martial arts. It's an art. It's an art of the body and how it moves. Fighting is actual fighting. You have to defeat someone with the skills and muscle reaction and action reaction and muscle memory that you have trained for. But the thing is that you're going to be different than her, right? And Joe Blow is going to come here. He's got different skills than you have. So I have to sort of adapt. If you're doing karate and you're doing a kata, which just means like a demonstration of certain moves, right? If you're doing a kata, this, kick, move, and you're doing it by yourself, and you do that against someone who knows the kata, maybe someone who doesn't know the kata, you're going to have two different actions, reactions, always. So that is an art. Doing your kata, your karate kata is an art. It's an art of movement and you know, certain movements, certain kicks, certain punches. But fighting is more than that. It's up here as well.
Okay. You're pointing to the mind.
100%.
How painful? Is there a point where the pain of being hit and being scraped and
you're walking down the street, maybe on a winter, and you slip and you fall and you hit your hip or your head or your shoulder. How much does it hurt? And does it hurt right away, or does it hurt only a few seconds later? Because the initial shock, you're like, oh.
Yeah,
you don't really
it
feel
takes it. Your breath away for a second.
You don't really feel it until a few seconds later when the adrenaline drops. Right?
But at that point, you're still back fighting.
But your adrenaline is still here. When you're fighting, your adrenaline is still here.
So you're not feeling the hits and the blows.
You are, but
I'm assuming like the next morning, you can't move your body.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, so a shout out to Mark Holtz. Mark Holtz, what's up, buddy? I fought Mark Holtz twice. Second time, he kicked my legs so many times. Mark, my leg was really sore the next day. My leg was really sore. But during the fight, I kept going, come on, hit me again. Slap my leg. Come on, kick me in the leg again. Because that's just the way it is. You have to say, no, that doesn't hurt. Come on, try it again. It's part of the fighting. You have to, it's a mental fighting. It's what it is. Like really, you have to let them know. Keep trying. Try it again.
Okay, when you're now in, so I look at the martial arts, right? Mm-hmm. And I've covered so much of the karate and the right. jiu-jitsu, and you have the space that you're doing it in. When you put yourself in a cage with not the kimono or the gi or the respect or anything else.
Respect is there.
Okay. The sense of being in a cage is like these caged animals. So where do you...
Are you calling us animals? That's not cool.
She just
called us animals.
She called me a teddy bear. I did call you a teddy bear. But you've cried like four times in this podcast. You've cried more than anybody else ever been in here. This is great. When you step into a cage, what do you feel like? I mean, and you're on spectacle. It's like a fish in an aquarium. Everyone's just kind of staring.
It's an adrenaline rush. It's also a fear that you're going to fail. It's also a goal. It's also a love to learn about yourself. That's what goes through my mind the whole time. So it's not just fighting. It really isn't just fighting. It's building your character. When I go to fight somebody and I know I could, like example, when I'm out with some friends or somebody recognize me and say, oh, you must be so tough in the bars or tough. I have no desire to fight anywhere else. Why? We take a chance that this guy's going to stab me? What's the point of that? I have no desire to do that. Some guy on the street, and he's got these issues. He's got personal issues to fight me. Why? I have no desire to beat up a guy because he's got personal issues or he's angry over something, his girlfriend, or whatever the case. It's never happened to me, but I have no desire. But in the cage, you're both there literally, you're getting paid. First of all, it's a nice paycheck, but you're there literally to try and overcome your personal fears.
Is there respect that the other fighter is doing the exact same thing that you're doing?
Not every fighter is the same, but I think for the most part, most fighters are there because they know that it's, first of all, it's a job, and they know that it has nothing to do with disrespect. It's a job, and their goal is to win by the rules, right? Hence why we have rules. If we didn't have rules, then what's the point of it? So you also have to go in there and say, okay, well, I can't do this and I can't do that. So that means I have to use my skill levels and work towards, you know, a win within those rules.
Do you appreciate that everyone's coming in? And I think this is what I found was interesting when I first started to learn about it, is that there's so many different backgrounds. There's so many different martial art backgrounds of where people have their expertise and their training. So you'll have somebody who's really good at grappling or on the floor, but then you have someone who's really good at, you know,
at something else
that kick, you know, so that, yeah. You have one that's good standing on their feet. You have somebody that's good being down on the ground, and that's where the entertainment is like, how do you get to that point?
The you know, it's funny because the changing of the guards has been, you know, once every 2 or 3 years. If we're talking about the UFC, the biggest shows out there. And I say change of the guards, meaning, you know, there's been a certain crew of top fighters, you know, Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture and those type of things. You know, I'm talking ancient history, but so when those guys were around, they were around for a long time because they're wrestling, because of their striking skills and whatever. But then a couple of years later, all of a sudden there's a whole new crew. Now these guys are sitting aside because they're either older or there's a whole new set of skills being added to their repertoire. And then every few years, these change of the guards terms shorten. Now it's like literally every 3 months you see a whole new crew coming up. Everyone is putting their skills together so rapidly, I can't keep up. I can't even keep up with who's on top these days. They are starting to add all kinds of skills. They're starting to add, you know, before it used to be wrestling, Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, nothing more. Then they started adding Taekwondo. So, you know, somebody started using, sometimes people are so athletic that a traditional martial arts works for them. Then somebody started using karate movement. But I mean, it's kicks and punches, guys. It's kicks and punches.
Oh, come on.
It's kicks and punches.
We have Karate Kid. There's that famous kick. Standing on one leg for 30 seconds.
I'd like to see somebody try that. Somebody try that in UFC. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, so you can call it whatever you want, right? I call it striking. They can call it Muay Thai. Oh, that was a Muay Thai elbow, or that was a Muay Thai kick. It's a kick. He kicked it a certain way. You know, and I find the mentality behind it quite interesting as well, because that was a Taekwondo kick. I haven't seen a karate guy do the same move. What was it? Is that a karate guy? Is it a karate kick or is it a Taekwondo? It makes no sense to me. As long as the skills work for each individual, then that's great, because everyone's different. Everybody's different.
Right. And everyone's different coming in to be able to participate in this.
Yeah.
The first time, right? So let's go to that. Who's walking into, so we have Bushido, right?
Team Bushido, yeah.
So you have a parent bringing in a young child who they're coming in because they want them just to be physically active. Mm-hmm. You've got a parent coming in because their child's feeling bullied in the schoolyard, or is lacking self-confidence, mm-hmm. or doesn't speak up for themselves. You've got a middle-aged man coming in the middle of a life crisis, kind of going, I got to do something, right? Like, you weren't quite midlife by this when you got in there. You've got, you know, a mom coming in or a woman coming in for self-defense or just to feel better after having a baby. Like, you see everything now coming
everything,
in the
doors. So how I approach every person is always different. It always depends on what their goal is and what their reason is, of course.
Are people honest about their reasoning?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, I shouldn't say no. I'd say they misunderstand themselves as to why they want to start. And I say that because more times than others, the people that have told me the reasons why they started, and then by the time they get into the program, their attitude has changed a bit, right? A lot of times I get, this is like 90% of the times, like, oh, I want to get in shape first. So, well, it doesn't matter. This is what the whole purpose of getting you here is, to get you in shape. So Leanne Lang, who is in great shape because of your Olympic background.
I'm not the Olympics. Well, but I mean, I was an elite gymnast. Yes.
Yeah, elite. You're an elite gymnast, right? So you come in, let's say Leanne Lang comes in, you're an elite gymnast, and you say, I'm already in great shape, which I get this a lot as well. I'm already in great shape because I do triathlons and so on. So it's not a problem. All right, sure, let's go. Take your first class, see how you feel. It's very different. You'll because it's a different movement, right? Mm-hmm. You know as well as I do, if you do tumbling or whatever the case you do, it doesn't mean you can throw 100 punches in 3 minutes. It's not the same. So people have a different idea when they start, and they fall in love with it because it's very different than anything else they've ever done. For self-defense, it's fantastic, but I won't lie to them. I won't tell them, this is not Krav Maga. This is not like, kick somebody in the groin and gouge the eyes out. It's... But you will start to understand the confidence that you need to be aware of your environment, number one, and to be able to say to yourself, if something happens, I have some tools. But you know what? If I'm teaching you how to kick and punch, why do I have to teach you to kick and punch the groin? You know where the groin is. Kick and punch the groin. What's the difference? Do you know what I mean? So if I'm going to give you a Krav Maga class, okay, knee to the groin and this and then eye gouge. You know how to eye gouge somebody. Why do I have to teach you how to eye gouge somebody? It doesn't make sense to me. So if I teach you how to kick and punch and teach you how to use force, right? If I want to punch you in the face for sport, great. If I want to punch you in the groin because it's self-defense, why do I have to teach you that? It makes sense? So that's why I'm honest with my clients. I tell them, but this is a very, very good self-defense. And on the ground for jiu-jitsu, we'll teach you how to submit people or at least protect yourself as much as you can. But I also won't lie about size. If you're a 5'2" woman, 120 pounds, and you have a guy who's 200 pounds and he grabs you, there's not shit you can do. Nothing. I don't care how much of a good jiu-jitsu person you are. You got to run. You run your ass off and get the hell out of there. Straight up. I mean, there's only so much a person can do. But I mean, in that sense, they're also going to learn how to be confident and also learn that that need to get in shape. That's the first thing about self-defense, is to be in shape. So getting in shape means you can sprint and get the hell out of there. So that's what I believe.
Well, we crossed off the women's self-defense
there you go.
part of your attitude right there.
No, hey, look, yeah. Women's self-defense. I not that I don't think it's good. It's great. But look, if you're only going to do Krav Maga or some sort of a weapons defense and that type of thing, and you're learning to kick the groin and elbow the face and gouge the eyes out, that's fantastic. I'm not saying it's not good at all. All I'm saying is that if you walk into a place and it's a Muay Thai gym or an MMA gym, you're still going to learn how to defend yourself. The thing is that if you're going to do just eye gouging and just knee striking, that type of thing, and it's just for self-defense, fantastic. Then do that. But you need to get in shape regardless. So go to the gym, hit the sprints, hit the treadmill, because that stuff is not going to get you in shape. They may maybe get you, maybe they'll get
no,
you.
No, I understand that. Yeah. I do understand that. And I think there's some awareness that I think every woman needs to have.
Yeah.
Being in a compromising situation. Yeah. Can we talk about the kids? Because I know that once you started to feel what this was doing, you immediately brought your children into it. So
I forced
how
them.
Are you?
I forced them.
How are you now when you see young children come in? And what do you want to be able to do with them?
Kids, I want them to learn. First of all, we have great kids instructors, Shauna Page, who's fantastic, and we have Jeriwell Pardo. I love you guys. You guys are great. They are very, very good. Jeriwell is more the competitive side for jiu-jitsu for the kids, and then Shauna is also competitive, but she's more the disciplinary. Not that you're not good, Jerry. You're very good at disciplining the kids.
Okay, but you bring in discipline right off the
bat.
Yeah,
100%.
My kids go to soccer practice. It's not like it's discipline.
No, soccer moms hockey moms.
Don't knock us moms right now.
Listen, I had a big hockey team come to my gym for me to teach them some fitness training, and I know what hockey moms are like. So I took 25 kids and put them on my mat, and I had like ladder drills and all kinds of stuff happening. But before I started them, I sat all the parents down. I looked at all the parents. I said, listen, I know what your hockey parents are like. Right now, the kids are on the mat. They're my kids. So, and they went a few times.
Yeah, so, I'm used to being coached. So I'm the parent that drops off and then picks up.
Yeah, because there you go. Smart.
The 2 hours they're at training, it's the coach's response.
Have to do it, yeah.
It's them. And if they're out of line, please, you know, put them in line.
Discipline. It's very important for the kids because it falls in line with home. It falls in line with school. We are a school, so we have to teach. So what we're doing, we're not going to just teach kids how to beat each other up. They still have to learn how to respect their leaders, respect who's coaching them, whether it's the teacher, the mom, the dad, or the martial arts instructor. It's just important for them to realize that, you know, you're in an environment where you're learning, and if you're not going to be able to learn if you're sitting there fooling around. It's simple as that.
Who have you seen the classes most benefit? What kind of children?
Really, kids with the ADHD and ADD, and we have one child who has who's autistic, and man, it has helped him so much. I love that kid; he's a sweetheart. His dad loves us so much, and he brings him like 4 or 5 times a week. He's adorable. Wow. He's really adorable, and he just runs off and just says things. He walks in the gym. He looks like, "Hi, Dale." He walks by. He's like 4 years old. "Hi, Dale. Hi, Dale." He's "Hi there." He says, "Hi, Dale. Hi, Dale." And he walks in. He's adorable. And it's like, it really helps. I had, when I was in Rockland, we had a gym in Rockland. I had Patrick Hines, who had Down syndrome, who was one of my favorite students ever. And he's all grown up now. He also has his black belt, I believe.
What's it like, speaking of belts, like when kids or people graduate from one belt level to another?
It's a real progression and a real pride thing for them. And we don't just hand out belts. We don't just give away belts and stripes. Stripes are just like the in between belts. We give them little stripes on their belt. They really, really they start to change, you know. And I say that about kids, but you know what? When I started training, I started to change. It's like, yeah, check this new belt. When I got a new belt, you know, starting in martial arts, I wore it at home. But look, honey, look what I got. It's cool.
A good old yellow belt.
Yellow belt. It was pretty cool. You know, it's just, you know, whether it's at work or at play. I mean, you're learning and you're getting better, and people have to recognize you're getting better. And if they don't recognize you're getting better, and you don't get at least a small pat on the back, and it's not like you won 6th place. It's not like you won 5th place or you won a participation medal. You put in the work. You put in the work. Yeah, you earned it.
Does a lot go into that?
100%. Yeah, for sure. We do a lot of we make sure that they learn the techniques and they're done properly, and at least if they're putting the effort. I mean, if the kids are just physically unable to do certain moves, as long as they put the effort towards it, and we know that we've tried it 10, 15, 16 times, and they just can't seem to get exactly perfect, it'll come. But they're putting the effort. That's the important part, right?
And what about the middle-aged man coming in who says, I'm already in shape, but I want to try something new, or I want to get in shape. Do you just smile when they walk in the door?
Always. I always smile. Smiling is important. Otherwise, they'll run away.
What's usually the trigger for them walking in?
A lot of times, like almost every single person that comes in, I want to get back into shape. It's always, I want to get back into shape. I always take it with a grain of salt and go, okay, well, you're never really in shape, really, compared to what you've ever done before, because it's different. Hence what I was talking about earlier about, you know, whatever sports you did before, it's not the same. Sometimes we get big muscle guys come in and they want to try it, but they don't usually last because it's a passion, right? You really have to understand it. It's a passion. So if you're a bodybuilder and you actually enjoy it, I hate lifting weights. I hate it. I do it like 6 times a week. I hate it.
I was going to say, you look like you lift weights.
Yeah,
so
but I hate it. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like it. I only do it because I don't do enough of the other training. I didn't do a lot of lifting when I was fighting through my career. It's just so much work. Jesus, these things are heavy. Why the hell they put these things there? Anyway, lifting weights and putting them down. But so you either, some people have a passion for lifting weights and, you know, building the muscles and the inflammation of the muscles and so on. It just doesn't do anything for me. People love that. And you either love that, or you love the martial arts, or you love, you know.
You can love both.
Very, very rare. Honestly, very rare. There, I'm sure there is, but it's very rare. I have a couple of guys that do lift weights, but they don't lift weights to the point of, you know.
Okay, they're not. They're not trying to be.
Yeah, they're just they really do. They do.
Be on
it's
stage
a supplement.
At a show.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So if you find somebody who does stage work,
okay,
you don't find them in
that
the
gym. I see. Yeah. But I think you can have people who enjoy being at the gym lifting weights and going to a class.
Yeah, but not to the point of you know of being on stage. Yeah, you're right, 100%. When we first started our gym, when we first restarted our gym in Ottawa, we were in the back of a bodybuilding gym. They had a small space. And we tried to bring a few guys in, and we had one or two guys come in, and there's the muscle mass they couldn't keep up. And they said, "I'll just keep lifting weights." And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not what we do. So you have to really have a passion and patience, because not everyone progresses at the same time. We're going back to the belts. So some people will take, you know, 3 years to get a blue belt. Some people will take, you know, 5 years. Some people will take a year and a half. It all depends on how much time you put in, if you're physically able, if you're learning a technique fast enough. I'm the worst when it comes to learning technique. Nowadays, much better. When I first started, it took me forever to learn anything. And I'm physically not. I mean, people say, "Oh, you're an athlete." I'm not an athlete. I'm like the worst athlete you'll ever meet. I have a slow muscle fiber. I'm the slowest fighter you'll ever see. Like, I'm not fast at all. I'm just hard headed. I don't quit. That's the thing about me. You know, 40 some odd fights, I just don't quit. I don't like to quit. You know, I quit one time because I broke my arm in a fight in Calgary. I quit another time because the guy choked me out. That never happened again. Never got choked again ever because I learned.
But you're retired.
I retired, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that to say that's the last time I'm stepping in the ring?
What was it like?
Yeah.
Or what was the reason?
Both.
The reason was because I had five losses in a row. And I always make excuses. Wow, they were all younger.
Because I actually
like
saw that. I did do my research, and did, I did. Well, did I didn't. My research did not turn up the first 20 years of your life. But I saw that the last couple of fights were losses, and so I wondered.
Couple. Don't be.
I think there were five.
There was five. Oh, it was five. Five losses. Yeah. And I always make excuses. Yeah, but they were decision losses. I didn't tap out. I know it's the man in me that's gonna say that, or the macho, or the pride in me. But it's true though. I didn't tap out. I fought all the way through. And a few of the fights I thought that I won, because I put more, I did more takedowns or whatever the case. But the guys were younger. They had more energy. They had more whatever, you know. And it was hard. And this year I contemplated coming back. I told a big promoter. I swear to God I would.
Did we cover this? You're 50.
I'm 50.
50.
50 years old. Yeah. But look,
you want to go back?
Oh hell yeah!
In a ring.
Yeah, because it's a cage. Okay,
sorry, I want to go back in the cage.
Okay, so I want to go back in the cage. But I told myself I won't fight anybody unless they're 40 and up. And there's guys out there that still want to come back. So I had one guy that will come back. He's 52. He's still in good shape, but he's smaller than me. So I'm 215 pounds right now. So we'll see. We'll see. Maybe.
Why would you want to?
Because it's fun.
It's your.
It is fun.
Is it fair to say there's almost like an addictive aspect to it, that this was the replacement for?
It could be. Yeah, it could be. Yeah, but I mean, I haven't fought in 5 years, so it's not. I wouldn't call it.
Are you not enjoying not hurting every day, and that your body isn't sore or?
My body's still sore.
It is.
Yeah, it's always sore.
I mean. Your nose is a little sideways, like mine. Like mine. I've broken my nose so many times that mine's... Like,
she just mentioned my nose?
No.
What's wrong with my nose? Yeah, it's true. I had five surgeries on it already. Yeah. Okay. How many?
I've broken it 3 times.
How?
I was a gymnast, so I landed on my face a lot.
You're not supposed to land on your face when you're
No, but when you don't rotate
I'm supposed
enough,
to get my face
or,
punched.
Yeah, trust me. I was waiting for the third break or the fourth break so that I could actually have it fixed when I was lying on the table. Yeah. I'm like, could you just make it smaller and not as pointy? But that opportunity never
Can you
came.
Breathe?
Yeah, I can. So I didn't qualify for the, can you please make my nose not look like Barbra Streisand? So in closing, because like that's how fast time flies.
It does.
Well, not everyone can go to, like, there's people that are listening to this in all different places. So what would you recommend when people are trying to find a place or an instructor or when they walk into a gym, to a martial arts studio, What are the questions they should be asking, and the environment? Like, what do you want them to have as their almost like their mission statement?
It's really, it's very important for you to be happy and comfortable with your instructor. End of story. It doesn't matter what martial arts you do. And if you've never done martial arts before and you really don't know what martial arts to do, you can look up videos and stuff. But you know what? You won't really know until you actually do it. You won't know what you like until you actually do it, right? So I would recommend you going to try all the martial arts out there if you're really, really unsure. And don't just go into the first one and say, this is the one I like. No. Try it.
All right, that's for someone. But then say you have like a 10-year-old boy who's mm-hmm. like, hey, mom, I want to go do this.
Same concept. Same thing. Absolutely. Especially for kids. Number one for kids, the kids and the parents have to be comfortable with the instructor, right? If you're comfortable with that one instructor and there's no one else that they're comfortable with in that environment, then go to a different place. They have to be comfortable with the instructor and the instruction and the whole environment of the gym, bar none. That's one of the most important things. Whether he's learning taekwondo, jiu-jitsu, or karate, or whatever the case. Because if the instructor is teaching them correctly, whether it's the technique or anything else, it's a matter of what they're trying to build in this child. The character is number one. You're building a character in this child. You know, trying to build their confidence, trying to build their self-esteem and that type of thing. Whether the technique is done properly or not, that's important. But way more important is the character of the individual. For me.
And will you be able to see that if you have an incredibly shy or introverted child to put them in that environment? How can you tell that there's a connection?
Well, if someone is shy, if a child is shy and it takes, you know, 2, 3, 4 times for them to sort of open up to the instructor, as long as you see progress step by step, a little bit by bit, which we see in our gym a lot, then you know they're in the right place. And that's what I tell parents too. I said, look, I'll tell them, I said, bring them in, let them, you know, I said, Shauna's very good, Jira's very, very good. And then when they start to realize that they're in good hands, then they'll start to open up and then they'll be more comfortable with the instructor and then start doing what they're told. And because a lot of times they'll sit back and be shy and not do any technique because they're just either scared or unsure. And there's nothing wrong with that. We just leave them aside. We just wait till they're comfortable. And once they're comfortable, then they start joining us. So that, I think, is number one, most important thing, is to be comfortable with the instructors.
And then for the anxiety, emotional release of people, do you see that coming out? Like the stress of work, the stress of home, like relationship, just, it comes out.
People have told me all the time how much they love coming to the gym, because by the time they're done a class, they're like, stress at work is just gone. Anything at home, they just... I've had candid conversations with many students on a private level about their private life, and you know it's quite the therapy. I'll tell you that it's quite the therapy for people to come in and train, because they feel like they can open up and talk about stuff that's happening outside their training. So
in between kicks and punches, it's. That was for my boss.
Yep.
This was for my spouse.
Yeah, 100%.
This is how frustrated I am with my kids. Yeah. And it.
Hey, listen, I won't lie to you. It's happened to me. I've had days where, you know, today I wanted to go do this to, you know, and then do this because of that happened. And then I said, oh, I have to make sure I get to the gym. So I go to the gym, and I did a workout for about an hour and a half. And by the time I was done, I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna do any of that stuff.
You're good.
True story.
And in closing, thing you're most, the accomplishment out of all the list of things, what are you most proud of?
Kids, all three of them.
And I know.
You're going to get me again. I'm not going to cry this time. I'm not crying this time. Maybe I will. So my kids are my most amazing accomplishments, all three of them. Layla, Nadia, and Jonathan. Love you guys.
Hopefully they'll be proud listening to this. Be like, there's dad.
Yeah.
There's dad crying.
Yeah, they know. They see me cry all the time.
That's great.
They know.
Next time
we didn't talk about acting career. What happened? We're done already?
You know why? Because
we talked too much.
Because we're over an hour right now. We're over an hour. We can't, like, I mean, I mentioned that. He wants to act. He's doing stunts.
I am acting.
You are acting. I should say. I've seen some of the. I saw some of the demo. Yeah, there's lots of stuff on your. There's stuff on your website. Yeah. There's even him chopping. So we'll send people to your website.
I do it. Yeah.
Yeah, because you know I saw you chop an onion. Wait, there was an onion.
A chicken. An onion, celery, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mushrooms.
or something. Anyway, you had the proper technique down, and it was just like chop, 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 chop.
You know, that audition was for McDonald's, and I got it. I got the gig. It was a McDonald's, yeah, it was a McDonald's commercial. And you know what? They only saw my hands. That's all they saw was my hands.
I know, but were you chopping away?
I know. They didn't get me chop nothing. But that was the audition for. They wanted me to chop vegetables.
Okay, and
I was washing lettuce for McDonald's. It was weird.
I will say though, my description of you, because I saw some of the there's pictures of you in character.
Right.
Like you are exactly that. Like right out of like Die Hard villain. Right. You've gotten cast pretty well.
I'm a cop or a bad guy. Either one. It's like
a cop or a bad guy.
Yeah. There's like no in between. I want to be the daddy. I want to be the uncle. I want to be the whatever. The neighbor, but no, it's always a cop or a bad guy.
Can you memorize scripts pretty easily?
No, and yes.
Although those don't usually have long monologues. The cop and the bad guy. It's usually
no. My lines are pretty good. Yeah, my lines are pretty good. They're not monologues, but the lines I have to memorize are more about the situation and my goal, really. So the lines are important, but it's more about getting through the goal of what the situation is. So sometimes I can ad lib quite a bit.
But you're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a fight scene.
Yeah.
Well, those are really well choreographed.
I haven't done one fight scene yet. Not one.
That shocks me.
Yeah, I know,
that
right? Shocks me. I've done like a dozen films or so and not one fight scene.
Who do you compare yourself to as an actor?
Oh God, I never even thought of that.
Who's honestly? Who's the guy who's the mechanic? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Chris, no, that's the mechanic is Oh, tell me. Two, I weren't alive with
oh my gosh.
Something.
That's who you remind me of.
Really? Isn't that Chris something or other?
No.
No, Christian Bale.
No.
No, that's Oh.
Come on.
Look it up.
Now I'm like picking up my phone as we're wrapping this up.
The mechanic is?
The mechanic.
When he lost like 1,000 pounds?
No, but that's like, who's the mechanic? Who's the actor?
Jason Statham.
Thank you.
I'm thinking of another movie. Yeah, I get that too.
That's how I see you.
I get Jason Statham and I get Randy Couture.
Yeah. There you go. I mean,
I wish I could have his accent. I don't have his accent. I don't.
But you do. You do a lot of different voices, like, right?
I do some accents, yeah.
Okay, leave us off with a couple. Leave us off with a couple accents. I'm already on way over time.
You're putting me on the spot. What sort of accent are you looking for? Is that good?
That was good.
What sort of accent are you looking for? No, it's terrible.
Way better than I could have done. All my accents sound the same. They all sound the same. Thank you so much. This was really a nice, entertaining, learning, I had no idea.
A lot of people say that.
20 minutes, I'm like, what did I get myself into? So where can people find more information on the martial arts, on you and the movie career? Like, you've got everything.
Well, if you want to check out the martial arts, we have a website called teambushido.com, or just go to ottawagetsfit.com. It's very simple. And for me, it's nabilkhatib.com for my acting side. And if you guys want to check me out at the Waverly, I'm at the Waverly as well.
Go say hi to your new gym.
Come say hi at the new general manager of the Waverly. We're on Elgin. It's going to be the food is fantastic and the vibe is amazing. And the income email, I'll give you a free drink. One free drink. Come check us out and say hi.
Really appreciate it. Yeah. And I will have that in my show notes and let people know where they can find you. And it's really quite interesting. But I really appreciate the outlook of the fighting and the
it's
mental.
It's very, very different. Capacity. Yeah, sometimes people don't. Sometimes people. In our business, don't tell the truth, but they don't tell it all.
Well, I thought you were incredibly honest.
Yeah,
5'2" and 120 pounds and a 200-pound year.
Don't do it. Just run. Always.
That is a wrap on this edition of Living Your Life with Leanne Lang. I want to say thank you so much to everyone who's listening, and thank you for liking and sharing and subscribing and commenting on the podcast, being able to help it grow and continue to see growth. It's so nice every night to kind of look and like, oh, more people were listening last night, more people today. So it's great to be able to see. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great day.
Peace. That was good.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundel, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network. or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.